Hey everybody, and welcome to episode number 88 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me as always is Dave.
Hey guys.
And we're here to talk about new comics that are going to be coming out Wednesday, September 9th, 2015. You know, Dave, it's the second week of September, and yet I find myself going, I can't believe it's September already.
I know. I feel like it's a little weird because Labor Day is like into September, and that's why It's hard to believe that it's September already.
Yeah, and we're almost into like the double digits of September, but we just had Labor Day weekend, and it's still nice out. You know, we're nowhere near sweater weather yet. At least I hope not.
I could do with some sweater weather.
Oh no, I'm definitely a shorts weather fan myself.
My favorite is like shorts, t-shirt, and a cardigan.
I was gonna say, so your favorite is like country club weather. And that's when you're hanging out with like Muffy and Biff.
I don't know who they are, but they sound cool.
Yeah, so September is here. We are officially 1 month away from New York Comic Con. It's a, you know what? This Wednesday, New Comic Book Day, is September 9th. I believe New York Comic Con starts on October 9th.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've started on Tuesday Night Movies a New York Comic Con exclusives page, like the exclusive merch you can buy. They haven't really announced too much yet, so that's going to be something that just gets updated as we get closer and closer. But man, I think this is going to be the biggest and best New York Comic Con yet, because they just keep adding more and more guests. Comic and, you know, TV and movie guests, and it just like keeps looking more awesome.
Yeah, I got an email from them last week, and I saw that Jerry Ordway is going to be there, and I was like, ooh, I'm bringing my Starman omnibus with the Shazam, Power of Shazam crossover.
Nice.
To get signed.
Yeah, what volume was that? Volume 3? Trying to think.
I'd say like 4-ish, I would guess.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely. It wasn't 5. 5 was Stars My Destination.
Yeah, so if 5 Stars My Destination, then it's definitely 4.
Gotcha. And New York Comic Con is the day off on that. It's actually October 8th through the 11th. So today, Tuesday, September 8th, a month from today, New York Comic Con. Hopefully you have your tickets. Amazingly, you know, Midtown Comics was going to be the final place to buy New York Comic Con tickets after they did the online sales and then the special edition NYC sales. That was supposed to take place in August, and I don't think it's happened yet. We're still waiting on word on like how people are going to be able to buy tickets at Midtown Comics. Because at this point, it's Midtown Comics or eBay.
Yeah.
And only one of those are you paying like retail price. Like I anybody who was like, I'm gonna skip paying $20 to get the special edition NYC, and I'll just wait till I get them at Midtown, I think made a mistake. It was so easy to get tickets to special edition.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like half the people who went there went just for that, you know.
Oh, totally. I saw people like as soon as they got off that outside. Yeah. They're like, all right, my day's done, you know. Which is too bad because it was a fun show.
It was. I kind of enjoyed it because it was all based around comics. Mainly comics. So that was really nice. And you know, New York City Comic Con, or is it just New York Comic Con?
New York Comic Con. Yeah.
New York Comic Con is much more like, you know, what people talk about, like cons have become, you know, everything but comics, which, you know, isn't true, but you know, that idea that it's like so much more than just comics,
right,
is what New York Comic Con has become, which is cool, because then, you know, you go down Artist Alley. If you go down Artist Alley and you stay there for all 4 days, you could have a comic book Comic Con. And I like New York Comic Con in that it's not like too big, and it's not and at the same time, it's you can kind of make the show what you want, you know, like
yeah.
you could do all comic book stuff if you wanted to. But if you wanted to go see like panels on Doctor Who or TV shows, you know, you could do that too, which is all part of that like nerd comic geek community. And yeah, so it's going to be a great time this year. I'm really, really looking forward to it because, you know, I wasn't there last year because I was getting married.
Right.
And our friends Ali and Kim will be there this year.
Yeah, I know they bought 3-day passes, so hopefully they'll be up for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Was Ali at your party this weekend?
No, he wasn't.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you guys had a chance to hang out.
No, we just kind of asked people who were like kind of close
gotcha.
By.
Gotcha. So I was just checking the New York Comic Con website. They already have a bunch of panels, like full schedules of panels listed on the website.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was up there, so that's exciting. And yeah, so that's a month away. Now, speaking of, we had mentioned Starman earlier, because you were excited for Jerry Ordway coming to New York Comic Con. Speaking of the Starman creative team of James Robinson and Tony Harris, it was announced this week that they are going to be working on a C-3PO comic. So Star-related, not Starman, but Star Wars. And this takes place after Return of the Jedi. It's going to explain why C-3PO has a red arm in the upcoming Star Wars movie.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah. It's not just like a throwaway C-3PO story. It's like leading into the new J.J. Abrams movie.
Yeah. I love all these Star Wars Marvel comics where they're getting like creative teams that I love on Star Wars. And I have never read a Star Wars comic in my life, but now that they're hitting the digital unlimited, I'm definitely going to start reading some of them. I heard the premise behind the Darth Vader comic, and I was like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. I want to read that.
Yeah, the Darth Vader comic, I believe, is written by Mark Waid. No, it's written by Kieran Gillen. It's really good. Yeah. Now, this C-3PO comic, I think, is just going to be a one-shot. I don't believe it's like a limited series or even an ongoing series.
Okay. Well, and, I mean, I kind of feel like a C-3PO is a little bit of a one-note character in a way.
Right.
Being that he is a robot. Or a droid, excuse me.
He's so robotic.
that, like, you know, like, he's not, you know, is there, he's there kind of, or like, you know, punchlines.
Right. And James had a really cool quote where he says, the really exciting part of doing the story is that he saw a photo of C-3PO with his red arm the other day, and he thought to himself, wow, I'm the writer who gets to explain that. That was posted to the Star Wars website. So this should be a cool comic. I believe it doesn't say when it's coming out, though I believe it's going to be in November or December. Let's see. I'm guessing this will be coming out in December, right around the time of the movie.
Yeah, that would make sense. If it's kind of like a more of a tie-in to the new movies than what has come from Marvel since they started the Star Wars books.
Yeah, and the, you know, Diamond previews for November is already out, so this must be coming out in December, or else we would have known about this already. But yeah, and the cover by Tony Harris looks great. He's been doing a lot of Star Wars stuff if you follow him on Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is very, very cool. And it's like they were like, how can we get Dave Tomko to buy a Star Wars comic?
I know. Tony Harris and then James Robinson.
Yeah. And that's like the only bit of comic news that really like, you know, stood out to me this week. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, that was about it. I didn't really see too much out there that I was like, oh, hey.
Now, now I did spend a lot of money. I went way past my 20 last week, and it was all on 99-cent comics. DC had such a good sale on Comixology. I bought all of Gotham Central, so that was $40 right there.
Right, and then there wasn't...
I also jumped on that Pete Tomasi run of Outsiders that you pointed out to me. And I was like, well, there's another $12.
Yeah, I was like, your writer, you didn't pick up your writer crushers run on Outsiders?
It's like, thanks, Dave. It's funny, I like just glossed over that. And then I was like, oh, well, guess while I'm tapping here, you know, hitting that like buy now 99 cent button, I might as well just keep going. Yeah, pity me.
Yeah.
So that's that. So Dave, what are you buying this week? What's in your 20?
Well, to start, I'm going with Justice League United, number 13.
Yeah, very, very cool. Tony Harris cover with Swamp Thing and Poison Ivy on there.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I've just been raving about this book since, you know, I started, since Jeff Parker took over. This month's book has a guest artist, Paul Pelletier, who has been recently drawing Aquaman.
Yeah, he's been great on Aquaman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it stars Steel, Robot Man, Batgirl, and Vandal Savage. So I'm not, it looks like they set up a subplot with Poison Ivy and Swamp Thing in how the last arc ended. So I think you might see more of that. So it seems like no part of the DCU is going to be untouched by the series, you know?
Right.
So I'm really excited to see where all this goes. But Steel, Robot Man, Batgirl, and Vandal Savage, boom, I'm way in.
Yeah, I feel like they sold you right at Steel.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, JSA bad guy, Robot Man, and I think it's the Doom Patrol Robot Man, which is pretty cool. Mm. So yeah, I'm excited.
As opposed to what other Robot Man?
There's the classic Golden Age Robot Man.
Is he a different character? Like, it wasn't Vic Steele or?
No. His name was Robert Crane.
Oh, interesting.
And he, if anybody read the All-Star Squadron, he was a pretty big character in that. And it was either James Robinson or whoever took over after James Robinson. I forget his name. In Earth 2, they made a Robot Man on Earth 2, but they didn't call him Robot Man. Man, they just called him Dr. Crane, but he ends up in a robot body.
Cliff Steel. I don't know what I called him earlier, but Cliff Steel, that's his name.
Yes, yes. I knew who you were talking about.
Yeah.
And after that, I'm going to go to Earth 2, number 10.
Staying strong with Earth 2.
Number 4.
Sorry. Earth 2 Society, number 4.
Yeah. So this is going to focus on the supervillains of this world. And in the cover of it looks kind of interesting. It almost looks like that's like a Nucleon outfit.
Yeah, I thought it looks like the Flash is getting drunk with a couple of people, one of whom is wearing his helmet.
You know what? That is the Flash. But it almost looked like it looked like that little atomic burst.
Definitely.
And you don't often see the Flash with his helmet off. He looks a lot better without that ugly thing on.
Yeah, that helmet is terrible.
Yeah. So so those are the two books I'm looking at for DC this week. Mm. Not that big of a DC week for me. And after that, I'm going to go down to Marvel, mm-hmm. I think. And actually, I'm not going to go down to Marvel. I'm lying.
It's a lot of, it looks like a lot of Star Wars and Secret Wars in Marvel this week.
Yeah, and Hickman and and Robinson and Lemire are not writing anything, so I don't really have anything. I think those are my two books.
Yeah,
if they're doing a slower week because it's Labor Day week, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Hickman's, we're waiting on Secret Wars. that Robinson finished up his Secret War tie-ins. Lemire wasn't writing any Secret War tie-ins. He was just writing Hawkeye, which has kind of been coming out slow, which is okay, because I'm guessing he needs to wait and catch up with, you know, or wait for the rest of the Marvel Universe to catch up with him.
Right.
So, yeah, that's, I think that's it.
Oh, man. So what was your 20? An 8? 7?
It was 7. Yeah, it was a 7. But last week it was like a 26 or something like that.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm definitely going to make up for you, and I will start with Marvel. We've got Giant Size Little Marvel AVX number 4, which is a, you know, sort of a Secret Wars tie-in. It's written and drawn by Scotty Young. It's just fantastically fun. Like, I love Scotty Young's art, and I love his sense of humor as well. And like, when he takes on these like Muppet Babies versions of the Marvel Universe, and you know, I'm all for it. So that's $4 right there. Then we get a really interesting looking Star Wars comic that's coming out. Dave, if getting Tony Harris and James Robinson to write a Star Wars comic is the way to get you to buy one, I think they figured out the other way to get you interested, and that is get Greg Rucka to write a Star Wars comic. We got a new title called Journey to Star Wars Force Awakens Shattered Empire number 1. Say that 5 times fast.
You know, you had me with Greg Rucka and
then lost you at the title.
And then you lost me at a title that sounds more cumbersome than Legends of DC's Tomorrow's W show.
And you know, I get that they want people to know that, hey, this is going to be like leading up to the movie, but I think they should have just called it Shattered Empire. It's got, you know, the cover shows the second Death Star blowing up, but it says, for the first time, new Star Wars canon, journey with us into the time after the end of Return of the Jedi, written by Greg Rucka and art by Marco Cicchetto, who drew Avengers World and Punisher. And I think this focuses maybe on like a group of stormtroopers post Return of the Jedi, like trying to figure out what to do. So I'm excited for that book. You know, Greg Rucka, this should be interesting. So that's $8 now. That
yeah. I think you're going to get an, I think Greg Rucka writes like political and political stuff really well. So it'll be interesting to see how he writes a crumbled empire.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100% on that. Then we've got Ms. Marvel number 18. It's a Secret Wars Last Days tie-in, which, you know, means that it takes place on the main Marvel Earth pre-Secret Wars. The regular team of G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. So for $3, that's a must buy. And that gets me up to $11. Ms. Marvel's still, you know, one of my, I'd say, top 3 Marvel comics that are out right now. So I said I'm at 11. Another $4 will get me to 15 with Civil War Volume 2, number 4. That's Charles Soule and Lionel Francis Yu. And I've just been absolutely loving this. And so with $5 left, I could get one comic. I kind of like want to borrow just from your budget and pick up a bunch of more Secret Wars tie-ins. But I'm going to jump up to Image, and I have to make a choice between the two comics written by Kieran Gillen with art by Jamie McKelvey and Matthew Wilson. And that's either Phonogram, the Immaterial Girl number 2, or Wicked and the Divine number 14, both coming out this week. I only have enough budget for one. So I'm going to go with the slightly cheaper comic, which is also the title I enjoy more, which is Wicked and the Divine, $3.50 versus $4. And I'm just absolutely loving that series. It just connects with me on like every level.
Wow, really cool. So that's your 20?
Yeah, that's my 20. I think I finished at $18.50. There are, you know, a couple of like DC and Marvel are putting out some like best ofs for $1, but it's all things I've read before. They're in Marvel Unlimited.
Like, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't need to read True Believers Black Widow Volume 5, number 1, or True Believers Ms. Marvel Volume 3, number 1. You know, those are books I bought the first time around.
Right. I read Wicked and Divine, the first trade, and about like 3/4 of the second trade.
Oh, nice.
This week. And I really liked it.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. I remember when I read the first issue, you know, I was a bit of a head scratcher, especially the first few pages. And then I ended up reading like the first three issues in one day when like the third issue came out, and it just read so much better. I think that is a title to read in trade.
Yeah, it read very well in trade. I didn't feel very lost at all. When I got into the second volume, it does seem a little bit more like they start adding more of the gods. Mm. And I'd say like the coolest part about the book is looking at gods and worship through like a pop culture lens.
Yeah, definitely.
And I just started watching the Going Clear documentary on Scientology.
Okay.
On HBO Go.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting parallels, you know. I've been having some weird dreams as I'm watching that and reading this, you know. They're thematically very similar, and interesting too. I mean, you know, I know L. Ron Hubbard started out as a pulp science fiction writer.
Yeah, that is a creepy documentary, Going Clear.
Yeah, I know my dad had read like a couple of his books.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it was pre Scientology, but like it was like one of those things where my dad was just he read a lot of like sci-fi fantasy books, growing up, and so like, you know, like he always read like, you know, Tarzan books, you know, who's the guy who goes to Mars that
drives John Carter,
right, John Carter, and you know, Isaac Asimov, and so like I think it was just in with all those stuff, and it's just funny that, you know, that he's read like a couple of, he's like, oh yeah, I read a couple of L. Ron Hubbard's books, like, but as a science fiction, you know.
Right. And, your dad's not Going Clear.
Right. But I thought it was interesting because when he had told me that, I was like, oh, that's crazy, like that he had read some of his books. But then listening to that documentary or watching that documentary, they said that L. Ron Hubbard holds the world record for like most books written ever.
Yeah, he was just like crazy prolific.
Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, so getting back to Wicked and Divine, thematically that's been interesting, you know, consuming both of those things at the same time. And it has like a really cool idea about becoming a god too, because I think that the main character's journey in some ways is kind of about her wanting to become a god. Mm. I don't know if she's going to get there or not. And then it's all based around like this murder mystery, which that's where I find it like a little like, I don't know how much I enjoy the murder mystery part. Right. Like it's there, but like they keep adding more gods that it could like, who could have like been doing this conspiracy.
Yeah.
I'm who is this? Like, and that annoys me in some levels I think in ways I've talked about in Identity Crisis, where like, if it's a true murder mystery, I want to be able to know who did it up front. Like, right. I'm not saying that I'm going to figure that out, but I want the ability to go back and be like, oh, so like, you know, put the pieces together and the puzzle pieces together and be like, that's how it happened. You know, which I think is a really, really hard thing to do. You know,
definitely, without like giving it away.
Right. And, you know, I think that's what makes like the Sherlock Holmes novels, like still like why people read them today and why that's being remade so much, you know,
right.
Still. But that's something that, you know, I'm like, I don't want it to be, well, this god that you didn't know, but you know, it's not written like a classic murder mystery. So like, I don't know if that's necessarily a fault of it, but that's just something that like, as they introduce more gods and you're like, could this guy be it? I guess, right. Maybe, I don't know. it gets a little weird where I'm like, who's this god? How does he relate? Like, and it doesn't seem like each god has the there's not a direct line to who they are in mythology necessarily. It seems like a little bit of pieces have been taken from here and there. That's the impression I get. I don't know if I'm correct in that, but and that they're also like kind of part human. Their human entity still plays a bit of a role in it. So it's a really good series. And anybody who likes looking at pop culture stuff and our society's view and I think how much emphasis we put on it in society, from like your Justin Bieber's to your Kanye West and all that kind of stuff. This is like a great piece of fiction that kind of talks about that.
Yeah, it is the comic that seems to draw in the most non-comics readers these days. Like whenever I'm talking to somebody who's not a comic book fan, that tends to be the series I recommend to them. But then it also tends to be the series that they're like, oh, I just read that and I loved it. like it seems to be that is what people are getting recommended these days. I don't want to be like loftily call it like this generation's Sandman, because I feel like that's a hard thing title to live up to. But I feel like in the way that Sandman drew in a lot of non-comic book readers as kind of like an alternative press kind of title.
Yeah.
Is that this, The Wicked and Divine is literary enough to bring in readers who would mainly read novels, but now, are finding this to be a worthwhile read.
Yeah. I'd say, I'd push Saga in front of that.
Okay.
Like Sarah's aunts have read Saga.
Really? Wow, that's amazing.
Like, and they're big into like sci-fi fantasy stuff, but they're not like comic book readers.
Gotcha.
And they were like, I remember posting a picture of like reading Saga like on the front porch one day, like in the summer, like when Sarah was gone at a dance competition and I was bored. I was like, oh, nice evening on the porch with a beer and some Saga. And they were like, oh, that's a great book. We've been reading it. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty crazy. So yeah, I feel like Saga might be a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Or neck and neck, who knows?
Right.
That's just from my sphere of influence.
Yeah, I feel like Saga definitely gets more press, and you do make a good point with that, with Sarah's aunts. It's just weird, like, whenever I just seem to recommend, like, books to people, it seems like Wicked and Divine is the book that non-comics fans are reading, but Saga definitely up there, too. Yeah, like, both of those seem, and if you enjoy one, I think you would enjoy the other.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So, what else did you read this week? Did you finish out Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies?
I did. I really liked it.
I liked it too.
It
tied up the story very nicely.
And I know that I'm pretty sure that James Robinson isn't writing Jim Hammond in anything that we know of post Secret Wars, but
right.
Man, I want him to keep going with that character and Ryuku,
right?
His girlfriend, who he created that character in as a legacy character in
Invaders,
all new Invaders. Yeah, all new Invaders. So I kind of hope we see him maybe show up as a character, maybe in the Scarlet Witch, if Vision's around, like
right.
That family's tying him in or something. And this might, all this stuff might play into Scarlet Witch because of the Vision connection. So we might be seeing Wonder Man, who knows how it all plays together. But that's kind of what I'm hoping for, because it feels like that's a character that, you know, he really found a voice through in his run on the Invaders and in this series. And part of me thinks maybe not, only because it's like a nice ending for the two of them.
Right. Yeah, that was a really nice series. Like, I wasn't familiar with her character because I hadn't really read All New Invaders. I think I read like the first couple issues of it on Marvel Unlimited, and that's it. But yeah, I really enjoyed that series. It was interesting that in a limited series that involved Wonder Man and the Vision so much, that the Scarlet Witch was nowhere to be found.
Right. Yeah.
But I really did like the Wild Wild West Wasp. Like, that was, I think she was my favorite character in the entire run of the,
oh, really?
Of the series. Yeah. Like, yeah. I wish we had gotten more of her.
No, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah. That was, but yeah, I think it played out as like a nice story set off from what was going on in Secret Wars, and it didn't feel too like, what the heck is going on? Even right. For like that crazy premise of Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an unexpected book of how great it was.
I thought he wrapped it up nicely. I was wondering like where, like at the end of issue three, I was wondering how this series was going to end, because, you know, Robinson can be cruel. Like, that could have very easily ended with like the Ultron zombies just overrunning Salvation. So right. I don't want to spoil the ending, but it was a good ending and very, very worthwhile. And like, you know, and doing what he does so well, very character driven.
Yeah, yeah. Did you read Plutona by Jeff Lemire?
I did not get a chance to read that. Was it good?
I did. It's a good start. The art's very cool. It's Jeff Lemire-esque in like its indie-ish style.
Right.
Jeff Lemire does a backup story, which he draws, which is cool. Because I always like when Jeff Lemire is drawing his own stuff. But it's cool. Basic premise is there's these kids who are, you know, living in a world of superheroes, and basically they're not like friends, but they all live in the same town, and they it's a little bit it kind of reminds me a little bit of Stand By Me in that way. And spoilers, but not spoilers. I mean, can I tell you how the issue ends?
Yeah, please do. All right.
Basically, they come across the dead body of Plutona.
Ah, and interesting.
In the woods. So, okay. So that's really that was like a cool ending. And then in the backup is the last case that Plutona went on.
Gotcha.
And so you're learning like how she ends up there.
It kind of reminds me of the first, you know, five issues of Power, is the first storyline of that, like, who killed Retro Girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it kind of feels like a little bit if you mashed up Sweet Tooth with Stand By Me and Powers, and then you get this book.
Gotcha. That's a nice little combo right there. That's like all quality books that and great movie that you that you tagged. Nice. And then that looks like a good series. Lemire is really killing it over at Image right now.
Yeah, he's got that. And then Descender, he with
Dustin Nguyen. That's another book I haven't had a chance to read yet, but it looks really cool. I keep seeing Dustin Nguyen post more art for that on Instagram, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, I really got to read this book.
Yeah, I feel like this was a stronger first issue than that, because I read that issue and I was like, this is interesting. I don't really have a clue what's going on. I'm going to wait for trade.
So I did read Thor's number 3 by Jason Aaron and Chris Sprouse. And this was a really interesting issue because Loki is kind of like, it seems, the psycho pirate of Secret Wars, because he is not one of the former Earth survivors, you know, that was on the life raft. But he shows up in this issue and he knows that he was destined for like greatness and not just as like a gutter punk informant. And he seems to almost remember like pre-Battle World stuff. So that's really interesting. And then it turns out that, like, you know, there it might be somebody on the inside who's killing all these Jane Fosters. So this might be a Thor Corps internal affairs investigation going on. And we get more, you know, just like police drama, though told through the eyes of a bunch of Thors. Like, this continues to be one of the most interesting Secret Wars tie-ins out there, I think, because it's not just a let's rehash a or continue a crossover storyline from years ago. Like, this is just examining, like putting a new light on the Thor Corps, which are, you know, Doom's guardians, but actually giving them like each their own distinct personalities, and they're not just like a sea of Thors.
Wow. So last week we found out that Deadpool was the psycho pirate of the original Secret Wars.
Right.
And this week we find out that Loki is the psycho pirate of this Secret Wars.
Yeah, it seems like I'm going to that analogy like as much as I can. But it totally does seem that way, like that, you know, Loki is like this, like, don't you sense that something is off? Like, it might not be like Psycho Pirate or Psycho Pirate actually remembered things, but it seems like Loki definitely knows that like Battle World isn't right.
Right. Well, and Psycho Pirate was more like even more crazier after.
Right.
Because he was like, I remember, but it
doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Yeah, there was
he was just like the fans.
Yeah, exactly. There was a great issue of Astro City. I believe it was the Astro City 1/2 issue that you had to like mail in a certificate from like Wizard Magazine, you know, and then to get this issue. And it was kind of like the fallout of Crisis of Infinite Earths in the Astro City universe, but told from the point of view of like a man on the street. And he just keeps having dreams about this woman. And it turns out like Astro City had its own crisis. And before the crisis, he was married to this woman. But after the crisis and like history rewrote itself because of like some, you know, just like flux that that woman was never born. So he kept having memories and dreams of this, like the love of his life, who then after the heroes saved the universe from some great disaster, a side effect is that she's never born. And it ended up being like one of my favorite comic books ever. Because it just dealt with like heartbreak and loss so well.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah. I read the first trade of Astro City and I was like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah, I never was a big Astro City reader. I think I'd sent away for that 1/2 issue just because, you know, it was something.
A 1/2 issue?
Yeah, like it's funny. Wizard had me like hook, line, and sinker for a while with all those 1/2 issues. And this was easily the best one that they ever published. Most were just throwaway stories. By, like,
oh, really? I loved the Teen Titans 1/2.
I don't think I ever read that one.
Was
that part of Jones's run?
Yeah, it showed how like Rose Wilson became the Ravager.
Okay, yes, I did see it. I did reread that one, and that was a good one. You're right.
Which it was added to the trade.
Yes,
a lot of them ended up going in the trade, but like I remember reading that and being like, if they don't include this in the trade, they're dumb.
Yeah, that was a really good issue. I think I sent away for that one because I was such a fan of that run of Teen Titans.
Yeah,
like that when it was Lemire McCann, I think, on that like it was just ideal. It was just so good.
Yeah, that's when it was
like that's when Deathstroke became cool again. He would become such a watered down lame villain, and like Geoff Johns made him like bad again.
Right. Yeah,
like he shoots Kid Flash shoots Impulse in the kneecap.
Yeah, it was nice where he did the you saw him he kills Wintergreen, who was basically John's kind of made it out like Wintergreen was his
like his conscience.
Yeah, and with him gone, he just became like a horrible guy.
Yeah, definitely. And that was, you know, that Wintergreen, for anyone who's not a long-term Deathstroke fan, was like his assistant, almost like his Jarvis. I guess,
right.
Almost like I remember the Punisher had like an assistant for a while that, like, you know, drove his getaway van, like made sure that his guns were oiled. I forget his name. Might have been like Microchip or something like that. It was never as cool a character as Wintergreen, though.
Yeah. Or how the Blade movies introduced Chris Christopherson's character.
You know, I've never seen the Blade movies. Those managed to get past me. It's funny because without those Blade movies, we would never have any of the successful comic book movies that we have today.
Go do yourself a favor and watch Blade 1 and 2.
Okay, not Blade 3. Blade 3 was the one I almost saw in the movie theater because I was a fan of Ryan Reynolds at the time.
Yeah, Blade 3 is not that great.
Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus.
I mean, if you watch it, you're not going to want to like stab your eyes out or anything. Right. But
it's not like Transformers 3.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great, but, you know. Yeah, but Blade 1 and 2 were really good.
All right, I'm going to have to get around to seeing those.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of it for me. I didn't read anything else this week. What about you?
I read Omega Man number 2.
How was that?
It was really good. So 1 and 2 are now $1.99 on Comixology. So anybody who wants it for a cheaper price, go out and get it. $4 will get you two issues instead of one issue here. And it's really interesting. Really, really interesting. In the sneak peek that DC put out, you see the Omega Men assassinate Kyle Rayner. And so this takes place after that and why they did that. Not a lot's explained in the first issue, but as you get into the second issue, you start seeing their worlds unfold, like whatever galaxy they're in and what Omega means and what Alpha means. And I kind of feel like it might tie back into the New Gods a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it's very religious. You know, they'll be like for Omega or for Alpha. And the end is, you know, end is Omega, beginning is Alpha, you know. So there's some type of religion going on, and you know, they're viewed as terrorists, the Omega Men, and so it's very interesting. Not a lot has been revealed, but everything that the pieces that you get are fascinating, and it's built in a way that makes it feel very, very, very like today-ish, you know, like if you like, I feel like if you like any of the shows that deal with like terrorism and that kind of stuff, like what's the My So-Called Life show, the girl from My So-Called Life who's on Showtime.
Yes, with the guy from Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
Homeland.
Yeah, like stuff like Homeland. I feel like you might be interested in Omega Men. And I also read Green Arrow. I forget the numbers, but they're I reread the first issue post-convergence, and then I read the second one. Both again, $1.99, and I had given that first issue like two thumbs up for making it feel like it's in Seattle, which I don't feel like I've ever gotten that feeling from a Green Arrow comic before.
Yeah.
He's looking after these murders that are happening in Seattle, as well as, you know, dealing with like somewhat of a bad stuff going on in Queen Industries, and it's really interesting. I'm liking it a lot. I would suggest both of those titles, and if anybody wants to pick them up, like I said, like $4 will get you two issues on Comixology instead of your $4 being spent, you know, on one book, and they're definitely worth it. And I would suggest picking up the sneak peek on both of those too, because they're free.
So yeah,
you get 2.5 books for the price of one.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and that's pretty much what I read.
Nice. Yeah, that brings it up to, you know, the end for me too. So I guess that brings us to the end of the podcast. I can't believe we're, you know, we're exactly 1 month away from New York Comic Con. I'm getting excited.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a great year. So look forward to our coverage of it on TuesdayNightMovies.com. Plus, we'll be covering it here on the podcast as well. Dave, thanks for joining me. And everybody else, have an awesome Tuesday night. We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
It sounds like you're falling through space.
I am.
Oh, that's not good.